Is the mic on? Yeah, there it is. Welcome again to The Way of Hope from Parables to Salvation. Just a word before we get started. I noticed that the ABC is already out of the CDs. The DVDs, there are a few left. I made 11 more sets last night. That's all the materials I have for now. If you do want such, I would advise you to go down and do get them right away. Remember, you can get the individual ones from here, the regular camp meetings, but the whole set like this you can only get at the ABC. And there are 10 in the set. We are only doing 8 of the 10 presentations here. Daniel 9 is available. If, worst case scenario, you're there and they're gone, I have made arrangements with the ABC. Just make an order, and it can be sent to you. And so if you get there and they're all gone, or what you want is gone, just make an order. But I would advise you, you'll save some money as shipping and so on if you just go ahead and get it and be one of those that gets it now. Okay. The Way of Hope from Parables to Salvation. Now, by the way, tomorrow in the morning and in the evening is Daniel 9, a deeper look. You won't want to miss this. This is covering some new, deeper ground that you will, it will set your roots in Adventism and the truth about the end. And it has a way, truth, throwing out error, the error of dispensations and secret raptures and all of the kinds of things that we see in the last days that we touched on in the parable. It's a continuation in a different direction. So hopefully you can be with us tomorrow as well. The lost son. I should say the lost sons. But wait a minute, lost son is right because it was one at a time. One was lost and then the other was lost. And what is even more important than that, we are going to see how most of us fit in one or the other. Let's look at Luke chapter 15. By the way, Luke chapter 15, you have the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. The lost sheep knew it was lost but couldn't find its way back, didn't know its way back. The lost coin didn't know it was lost and obviously couldn't find its way back. The lost son was lost, knew it was lost at a given point, but did know the way back. At least the first son. We're not sure about the second son. We'll see when we get there. Luke 15, verse 11. Then he said, a certain man had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. So he divided to them his livelihood. Let us notice that he had two sons, and we've got to remember, in the Jewish culture, according to Scripture, the oldest son gets two-thirds of the inheritance because he took all the responsibilities of the father for caring for all the rest of the family. So when it says the younger son said to his father, give me the portion of goods that falls me, he was asking for one-third of what the inheritance was. Now, let's look for just a moment. When are sons supposed to get their inheritance from their father? When they die. Whoa. In the Jewish culture, there is nothing that he could have done that dishonored his father more. In essence, he's saying, I wish you were dead so I could have my inheritance, but since you're not dead, give it to me anyway. What is amazing is that the Father gave it to him. And the theocracy of the Old Testament, had a son said that, he would have been stoned. That's how bad this situation was. But the Father divided to them his livelihood, it says. Now, the reason the younger son wanted his inheritance now is he didn't think his father knew how to live. A lot of times the younger generations, they don't understand. Yeah, they don't think, we know how to live. And they are living for the moment, and especially the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. At least while we're on this side of the fence. It is amazing to see this sort of thing happening, but it happens to all of us. At some time, we think the grass is greener over there than it is here. In verse 13, and not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. Not many days thereafter, he gathered all that he had. Now, I want you to notice, where did he go? Where did he go? What has happened here? Can we get on the screen my projection, please? Okay, I'm glad I turned around. I was seeing it clearly on my computer. There we are, thank you. Notice he goes to a far country. A far country. That is what the devil wants all of us to do. To get as far away from God, get as far away from truth, to get as far away from good as he can get us to go. Because the farther we go away, the farther it is back. Now, he goes to a far country and he wasted his possessions with prodigal living. You know, whatever we get in a windfall has a way of corrupting us. I mentioned previously this morning that those who win the lottery of $1 million or more, in the state of Florida alone, 80% of them within 5 years are worse off than they were before they won it. Financially, emotionally, family, every kind of way. When I was senior pastor at Miami Temple, we had one of our elders, his neighbor, just a couple houses down, won $4 million in the lottery. He worked for UPS. He had a good job, had a wife and 3 children, had a pretty good life. Within 4 years after he won the lottery, his wife was gone. His 3 kids were gone. He had more debt than he did before he won the lottery. And he couldn't find a job that paid what he paid, got paid before he won the lottery, and he quit. And he told our elder, he said, "I wish I had never won the lottery. It has ruined my life." You see, what we don't work for and earn, when we get a windfall of money, there are very few people that can handle that. In fact, give you a Jewish expression. You know, Jesus said it's harder for a a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven than a camel to go through the eye of a needle? Actually, the Jew, it was an idiom, and it's not translated that well. What is translated as a camel, if you look, could also be translated rope. A rope going through the eye of a needle. Can a rope do that? There's only one way. You pull it all apart and put it through piece by piece. You have to unwind it, have to undo it. And what Jesus was saying is, look, you've got to undo your life. You've got to, well, just like the last presentation we talked about, you know, you've got to sell it all and buy that pearl at great price. But what it's saying is a rich man has a very hard time. They've got that rope. They got so much entanglement. It is very difficult. You can take a thread and get it through the eye of a needle fairly easily, but you're going to get a rope through there? It is going to be very, very difficult at best. He wasted his possession with prodigal living. And that's why I mentioned in the last presentation about the Christian man that was very wealthy said he was not going to leave a windfall of money to any of his children. He had put them through school. He left the grandchildren something to help to get them through school. He gave them personal things. But he said, I do not want... And he told them ahead of time, it's not because I don't love you. I don't want to put a stumbling block in front of you. And he says, I'm going to give it away. And he says, my one goal is to die broke. I can't take it with me, and I don't want to corrupt you with it. I want to give it and use it for God. Well, here we see the youngest son was corrupted with a third of evidently a fairly large estate. Notice in verse 14, but when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in the land, and he began to be in want. The grass is always greener. It's better in California. It's better in Florida. It's better in BC. It's better in Ontario. It's better somewhere than where we are. But you know, the way human nature is, all we like sheep have gone astray. I remember going to Scotland the first time I flew into Prestwick, the old, near Glasgow, the old airport. Rented a little car, went out in the country, beautiful rolling hills with all the sheep. And up over the hills were the stone walls, but along the road there was a type of barbed wire. It was a fence, and there were hundreds of sheep at this one spot, and they all had their heads through eating the grass that was in the ditch, you know, outside the field. But what caught my attention, there was one sheep that had gotten out. One. Guess where it was eating? It had its head back through the fence, eating in the field that he just came out of. But that's the way we are. Grass is always greener when we're over there. But when we get there, it's not as green as we thought. It looks better back home or where we were. So here we have when he had spent all. Sometimes we've got to be at the bottom before we can look up. There rose a severe famine in the land. Now, I'm sure as long as he had the money, he could set up the drinks, he could buy the food, and he had a lot of good time friends. But when the money runs out, the friends run out. The good time friends, that is. And he began to be in want. A young man that never knew what it was like to be hungry or without money, now is there. In verse 15, then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country. And he sent him into the fields to feed swine. Now, wait a minute. A Jewish boy feeding hogs. Let's go on in verse 16. And he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that swine ate, and no one gave him anything. Now, wait a minute. Not only was he feeding the pigs, he was now desiring to eat what the pigs were eating. Now, I don't know if you've ever been around hogs much. On my mom's side, my grandparents lived on a farm in Michigan, and I spent a few summers there as a boy. And while they did raise fruit, they raised some animals, some cows and pigs and chickens. And one of my jobs was, as Grandma used to say, go out and slop the hogs. All of the garbage from the house and anything else, it was all thrown in there. There's only one problem with this picture. The boy's too clean. At least when I went out there, they had the where they slopped the hogs in the back of the barn there. It was in the middle of that room. And I go in there to slop the hogs, and the hogs weren't very polite. They didn't stand in line until I got it all poured in. I mean, they were all over me trying to get every drop before I could pour it in. And I came out smelling and looking a little bit like a hog every day. I had to go change clothes after slopping the hogs. Either that or go down and jump in the creek and get washed off. And it was hot day, that was better. But he's too clean. You see, a Jewish boy that wasn't supposed to eat or be around and raise, and there he is working, slaving, and even not getting enough food from the farmer, he's wanting to eat the hog slop. He's so starved. In verse 17, but when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare? And I perish with hunger. It's interesting. He wasn't willing to be a son back home. The grass was greener way over there. But now he is envying the hired servants of the... He didn't want to be a son, but now he was longing just to eat what the hired servants had. What a change of events. Here he was starving to death. But you know, I like this phrase, when he came to himself. Maybe, you know, most of us have been over Fool's Hill. Maybe some of us still on it. Some hills are longer and steeper than others, but most of us have at least had a little knoll. Some of us had quite a mountain. And while we're there on Fool's Hill, we're really not ourselves. Some way the devil's gotten control and we are running wild from where we know we should be and what is just common knowledge. Doing crazy things, and which he had done, and now he realizes here he is in a pig pen, starving to death, longing to be back home, even if it wasn't as a son. In verse 18, I will arise and go to my father, and will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. When he came to himself, he says, I'll go to my father. Now, why he had said and done things to dishonor his father, he knew his father was a good man. By the way, in the parable, the father is illustrating God the Father. The sons are illustrating us. The two sons. And notice he planned what he's going to say. Father, I have sinned against heaven. Had he sinned against heaven? Doesn't one of the Ten Commandments say, honor and your father and mother? Had he honored his father? He had dishonored him in the worst way. I have sinned against God. I've sinned against heaven and before you. And by the way, when we sin. And a lot of people say, I'm going to live my own life. It doesn't hurt anybody. It hurts God and it hurts those around us. Whatever we do is not in a vacuum. And he now realizes that in his younger days, in his going over Fool's Hill, he couldn't see it, didn't understand it, but now that he's at the bottom and looking up, he says, I've sinned against God and my Father. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. I've dishonored you so much, I have no right to be your son. And in all reality, when we have sinned, do we have a right to be the son or daughter of God? None of us have the right to be the son or daughter of God. It's only because of his mercy that he wants us to be his son or daughter and his forgiveness. He said, make me like one of your hired servants. Not only did he think that and say that, it says there in verse 20, and he arose and came to his father. But when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. Now let's break this verse down. He arose and came to his father. Now where was he? In a far country. Remember, this is before planes and trains and the boats that we have traveling now. And it's famine, so boats wouldn't have been even around anyway. There weren't any cars or taxis or buses. How was he going to come back from a far country? He had no money to even hitch a camel ride or donkey ride. He's going to go by what we used to call when I was a boy, Shank's ponies. That means walking. Maybe some of you have heard that expression. Now he's in a far country, coming out of a pig pen. And there's a famine, so the streams were dried up. Oh, so he couldn't go and wash off. I don't think we could draw as bad a picture as this boy would have. Not only had he left a pig pen, now he walks. Who knows how far? 100, 200 more miles. And hot weather, that weather over there doesn't tend to make you stay fresh. But when he was still a great way off, his father saw him. How did his father see him? I could just see in my mind's eye him going out on the porch of his house and looking, straining his eyes over the hills. Is my son going to come back today? Is my son going to come back today? And that one day he looks over there. Hey, that looks like my son. Strains those old eyes and looking harder and harder. And then he saw him probably limping along. Probably wore out his shoes, barefooted, or at least the holes in the bottom. And it was his son. Was his son. And what did he do? Did he sit up on the porch and say, I knew he'd be back? He ran. The old man comes off the porch and runs to meet his son. He had compassion on that wayward son. Not only did he run, he fell on his neck and he kissed him. He hugs him and kissed him. That stinky pig smell still on him. And all that travel and dust and dirt from that far country and the travel back. Notice in verse 21. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned and am no longer worthy to be called your son. Now, by the way, that's as far as he got. I imagine in those all those miles, he was rehearsing a speech, the best speech he had. His only one shot to get back in home as a hired servant. He had his speech all worked out, but all the father needed to hear is, Father, I've sinned against you and heaven. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. And the father cut him off right there. Do you know, it makes no difference how far away from God you have gone. That's all the Lord needs to hear. You don't have to have this long speech and all kinds of excuses. Lord, I've sinned. I'm no longer worthy to be your son or your daughter. And the father wraps you in his arms and kisses you and accepts you as a son or a daughter. Again. Love is the answer to heart's rebellion. In verse 22, but the father said to his servants, bring out the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet. I don't think we fully understand the customs that were there in that day. There are three things that were done here. Number one, put not just a clean robe. He said, I don't want anyone to see my son like that. Not just bring out a clean robe, bring out the what? Best robe. And what is the best robe spiritually? Righteousness of Christ. Cover up all of that, wash away all of that smell and stench and sin and make them totally holy, totally whole, totally justified before God. Now the second thing, put a ring on his hand. Now, some Adventists have a hard time with that. You know, we don't wear rings and jewelry and that. But wait a minute. What was this talking about? It was not just talking about ornamentation. The ring that is referred to there is the signet ring. In those days, the king and the wealthy people had a signet ring that indicated the authority and power, and today we would say the credit card and the bank accounts and the authority to sign, you know, for the family. What that meant is, no, you're not going to be a hired servant. You are a son again, with all the rights of a son. You are reinstated. You are part of my family. You are my son, not a hired servant. God doesn't want us to be some kind of slave or hired servant. He wants us to be His son, His daughter. So that's what that ring, the signet ring, was talking about. Not talking about jewelry, it's talking about sonship. Put sandals on His feet. From that far journey, He probably had sores, blisters. Maybe by that time He had the indication there, He might not have even had any shoes. They were wore out, and there He had to finish the last part barefooted. And let me tell you, over there are more sharp stones and all kinds of thorns, if you've ever been in that part of the world, than just about anywhere I've been. He said, I don't want my son hurt anymore. Put sandals on his feet so the stones and the thorns no longer hurt my son. I want him out of the environment of that hurt and pain and that hunger, all the rest of the... Put sandals on his feet. Then in verse 23, and bring the fatted calf here and kill it and let us eat and be merry. Back then, when they were ready for a party, the first thing they did was kill the fatted calf. That was a synonym for let's celebrate. Celebrate a birthday, celebrate a marriage, celebrate a homecoming. And so they brought the fatted calf. Let us be merry, celebrate. As he says here, for this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found, and they began to be merry. You know, in a lot of ways, I wish the story ended right there. Wouldn't that be a good Hollywood ending? The lost is back, and praise God, the younger son, the lost son, is back. But the story doesn't end there. But let's notice, love is the foundation of God's government. Love is of God, and everyone who loves is born of God in 1 John 4:7. 1 John 4:8, God is love. And verse 10, this is love, not that we love God, but that He loved us. It wasn't that the Son loved the Father loved the Son. And finally, after coming back and being accepted, I think that Son started loving the Father in a much deeper and a much different way than he ever had. As I said, I wish the story in many ways stopped there, but it doesn't. In verse 25, now his older brother was in the field. And as he came and drew near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. Now, wait a minute. It was his house. Why did he call a servant? I mean, shouldn't he have just gone and see for himself? You see, there was something inside. While this older brother had been at home, had honored his father all along, was busy working and doing everything. Today we'd say they were in church every Sabbath. They were doing all the kinds of things, and they were one of the 20% that does most of the work in the church. He was there. But he had this gut feeling, the reason there was a celebration, it was that ornery younger brother of his might have come back. As long as the brother was gone, it seemed like he was fine. But when the brother comes back, well, let's see what happens. Verse 27. And he said to him, this is the servant that the older brother asked, and he said to him, your brother has come, and because he has received him safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf. Again, that's a Jewish idiom or expression, a biblical expression for celebration. But he was angry and would not go in. Therefore, his father came out and pleaded with him. He wasn't happy that his brother came back. Now, first of all, let's be honest. Did he have a good reason to be angry with his brother? Yes. And why do you say that? Because he disrespected his father in the worst way. And so a lot of times in the church and we as individuals, we have a reason that we're upset with them. A valid reason. But does that give us reason to be unforgiving and hateful and judgmental and critical and not want anything to do with them? He would not go in. There have been some church members I've heard say, or former church members sometimes, I won't darken the door of that church as long as so-and-so is there. If they come in, I'm leaving. Well, that's the attitude of the older brother here, isn't it? Then notice, therefore, his father came out and pleaded with him. I want you to notice, for both sons, the father left the house to go get the son. John 3:16, for God, this is God the Father. By the way, I want you to remember this for tomorrow when I talk about Daniel 9. A deeper look. Part of the dispensations is in the Old Testament. It's God the Father and justice and law and works. It pictures God the Father as not caring. But Jesus said he came to reveal the Father. And in this parable, who is the caring one? In John 3:16, it says God, and is referring to the Father, so loved the world that he gave us his Son. Now let me ask you, parents, would it be easier to give your life or the life of your child if someone's life had to be taken? I don't know about you, but I can tell you about me. Take me. Leave my girl alone. It shows the Father's love in a deeper way. Abraham understood. You remember what happened up there with Isaac? Abraham understood better than any of us what the Father was going through. But bless his heart, the knife was ready to come down and God stopped him. So Abraham didn't have to get through the whole thing. He just thought he was. He was ready to. But God the Father was not only ready to, he did it. He did it. He came out and pleaded with the older son. Verse 29, so he answered and said to his father, lo, these many years I have been serving you. I never transgressed your commandment at any time, and you never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friends. Sounds very childish, doesn't it? He got a bigger piece of cake than I did. I wasn't invited to the party, but he was. Or he was invited first. He had the biggest present. Whatever. But that's the way we are many times, aren't we? Hey, why do they always get all the benefits? Why do they always get to perform in music and I don't? Or why do they always seem to get the best end of the deal? Why are they always called for and commended of what they've done? And no one pays any attention to what I've done. Now, the line it really gets me, though, is I never transgressed your commandment at any time. He had to be stretching that one. Now, maybe I'm the only one that didn't have perfect kids. As a child, were you perfect? You never once disobeyed your parents. And your kids, they are always do exactly what you say, never disobeyed you. Is that the way it is? Even the best of children at times disobey, don't they? And for him to say, I never transgress your commandment, he had to be stretching that one. It is true, he stayed there and worked, and basically, as far as work on the farm and all the rest, he was the better of the two, no question. And to the people around, he was the ideal son. Look at that younger one runs off, dishonors his father, but look at the older one stays right there. He's a pillar in the church. He's right there. He's not going anywhere. Well, I wish that were the case there, this older boy, but it wasn't. You never gave me a young goat. And it shows there's something resentment down in the belly. You never called my friends to celebrate. Then he goes on in verse 30. He wasn't finished yet. Now, by the way, he had maybe never dishonored his father before, but he certainly was then. Even if he was right, he had never dishonored, and I don't think he was, but even if he was right there, he wasn't right now. But as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him. Oh. Notice he says, as soon as this son of yours, you might claim him, but I don't. He might be your son, but he's not my brother. You look at what he's done, and he has totally disowned him in every fashion, in the strongest way. Then he went on and said, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots? Now, wait a minute. How did he know that? Remember, the younger son was in a far country. There was no texting. There was no email. There was no Twitter, Facebook. There wasn't even a telephone. In fact, there wasn't even a good postal system. And no television, no news media. How did he know? Well, the fact is he didn't know, but he was revealing something about himself. In fact, in the first three chapters of Romans, and I wish we had time to go into it, is pointing out the Jews that were accusing the pagans of doing certain things. Paul points out you're doing the same thing. That's why you know about it. Give you a couple illustrations of this. Maybe you remember back in the 80s, there was a televangelist, Jim Baker. And Jim Baker got involved in an immoral issue, brought his television empire crashing down. My wife and I were traveling, and we were in a motel room, and I had turned the television on. She was taking a shower, and she doesn't like to watch all these television. I like to watch them every now and then to see what's going on. And so I'm watching, and I turned to Jimmy Swaggart. And I expected, because it had just happened that week, I had expected him to say something. I mean, after all, how do you not say something? But I expected him to say something from there and then say something, we need to pray for him, you know, this is a terrible situation, and go on, but he didn't. He went on and on and on, and I'm sitting there on the bed, and I said, what is going on here? My wife came in, and she saw me, and she knows me well enough. Well, what's wrong, honey? What's going on? I said, I don't know exactly what's going on, but listen and watch. There's something wrong there. And a few months later, guess what? He was caught up in a similar mess. In fact, I had an old street buddy in my BC experience before Christ. And Jimmy used to say, it takes one to know one. And even the police realize if they can get a former criminal, a former robber or whatever, and get him doing right, he can catch the crooks better than anyone. He knows how they work. And so what we're seeing being revealed when it says he has wasted and devoured your livelihood with harlots, that's what he would have done if he was in his shoes. In other words, the reason he was so angry, I've missed all the fun. I've stayed here and worked, and he went and had all the fun. You see, the grass was still greener to him over there because he hadn't been there. Sometimes it's hardest for those in the church when they haven't had and seen the awfulness on the other side, and they haven't seen how brown and dead and what emotionally and spiritually and every other way the drought that's over there and not living for the Lord. And since they don't know that and all the glamour of Hollywood and the movies and television, that enticing, woo, you know, they don't say anything out loud, but inside, you know, I don't like to do that. And it had been festering so long in him, and now he's back, that younger son is back. So he's had his fun, he comes back, and he has his cake and eats it too. That was the attitude of the older son. And then on top of that, he says, and you've killed the fatted calf for him. And he said to him in verse 31, father speaking, son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. But, he goes on, it is right that we should make merry and be glad. For your brother was dead and is alive again and was lost and is found. The father put it to him straight. It's your brother. Now, I don't care what anyone has done to you in your family, in the church, in your neighborhood, or at work, or wherever. You might not claim them. But if we have the same father, that makes us brothers and sisters. And do we have the same father? God is the creator of all of us, right? And when we act in such a way toward anyone, we're acting just like this older brother did here. Regardless what they've done to us or not done. He was lost and he's found. Let's go back for just a moment. You see, the older brother had a problem. He didn't know it, and an earthly father didn't see it or know it. Now, certainly God did, and the one symbolized here. No one else in the church or anyone else knew that there was a problem, but down deep inside there was. And I want to go way out on a limb right now and say, there's some of that problem in just about every, if not every, church member we have. It might not be as severe as the older brother had. But down inside, we don't have the kind of love of God the Father toward other people. Be honest with yourself. Do you totally love the homeless? That person at work that always gets under your skin? And that brother or sister that is always aggravating you, or the other church members that are say one thing and do another, those hypocrites, and we could go on down a long list of things. Do you really love them? Or do you just tolerate them? Do you hold resentment toward anybody that has wronged you in the past, and you haven't really fully forgiven them? Not the kind of forgiveness we talked about yesterday afternoon, remember? Can't go back over all of that. Maybe you have a tendency to be judgmental. Did you hear what so-and-so said? Did you see what they were wearing or what they were doing? And we could go on and on. But I think you start to get the picture, don't you? Is there some of that older brother in us? How do we accept people? If that... What about that drunk and high on drugs that might walk into church? Do we gladly receive him, or we try to figure out a way to get him out of there so he doesn't stink up the church? How about us today? Do we need more acceptance and love and forgiveness and humility and caring? Remember, after the Lord's Prayer, this whole forgiveness thing came up again twice. Remember that? Not only in the prayer did he say, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. He also afterwards said, if you forgive those who... trespass against you, God will forgive yours. But if you don't, God's not going to forgive yours. Now, the strangest thing about this parable is this is where it ends. There's no Hollywood ending. We know what happened to the younger son. Did the older son come back in the house or not? We don't know. In most of the parables, you have some sort of conclusion. It tells you this is what happened. Not this one. You know why? You and I finish the story. He's talking about to especially people. The people who are church members. Yeah, at camp meeting. Not just the run of the mill, the ones that would take the time and effort and expense to come to camp meeting. How is it with us today? Do we need to come to Jesus and say, and this goes right along with the last one, sell all you have and for the pearl of great price. To be Christ-like That's what we need, isn't it? That we can have the love and acceptance and forgiveness. It's amazing, the most pure man and the only pure man that lived on the face of the earth after the fall, 100% pure, is Jesus. And what's amazing to me is sinners love to be around Him. But around some of us, and the Pharisees of old and some of us, they don't want to be around us. There's something missing about Jesus in our life. And as we wrap up these parables, we want to do something different today. There are 6 verses of Just As I Am. I'm going to have 2 calls. One for the younger son, one for the older son. If you have, and maybe I don't know how you got to camp meeting, there's probably not many here, if any, that has gone over Fool's Hill, or maybe is still on it, and you say, I want to come back to the Father now. As we sing the first 3 stanzas, I'm going to ask you to come up.